Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Stanmore Resources Limited 2023 half-year results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Marcelo Matos, Director and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Turrbal and the Jagera peoples here in Beijing in Brisbane. I also acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which our operations are based, the Barada-Barna, the Janga, and the Widi peoples of Central Queensland. Pay my respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging. And I'm pleased to be with you all this morning and share a bit of our 2023 half-a-year results just released. I'll begin with an overview of our achievements over this period on slide number three. As you can see, Stanmore continued to achieve some fantastic results over the first half with our operating performance strong following the acquisitive period in 2022. Our commitment to safety and the success of the integration of SMC is demonstrated by a steady injury rate, albeit we remain focused on continuing to share some of the learnings amongst our operations and to prioritize safety within our sites. The half was characterized by strong performance, driving 6.4 million tons of saleable production. However, it was our sales have been impacted by ongoing logistics constraints, which has materialized in a temporary impact to our unit FOB costs per sales ton. Shane, we're going to talk a bit later to explain a bit of the cost performance and this sales volume impact. Overall, these metrics have translated into a strong result of $650 million underlying EBITDA and facilitated the continued strong cash generation and into an inaugural net cash position since the acquisition of SMC. Moving to slide five, we would like to begin the detail of today's presentation by also highlighting our efforts in the areas of health, safety, environment, social impact. We are proud of the strong safety culture that we have at Stanmore. Our TRIFR has remained steady during the first half, a time of significant integration efforts of the SMC assets and the announcement and commencement of some capital projects, such as the MRHOC creek diversion at South Walker, which has required the mobilization of additional contractors and employees. Nonetheless, we do acknowledge that the TRIFR rate has increased since our 2022 full-year result, and we are committed to gaining a thorough understanding of the circumstances that led to the 8 injuries over the first half in order to ensure and manage improvements of our processes and the lead indicators. In the next slide, the board was pleased to release our 2022 sustainability report in early April this year, which highlighted some key successes across the group, as well as the key topics coming out of our materiality assessment back in 2022. Within the environment pillar, we are busy working on a water tactical plan across all operational sites, which will be cornerstone by the MRHOC creek diversion and on-site infrastructure at South Walker Creek. Our end goal of the statistical water planning is to build a high-resistant water network between all our sites, reducing our dependence from outsourcing water. Topsoil preservation for upcoming rehab has been a planning priority, with mulching of materials from MRHOC clearing and grubbing, providing key organic materials to support further rehab across all sites. As importantly, progress has been made on our understanding of the impact of the safeguard mechanism to our business and on initiatives to help manage our emissions footprint. Partnerships with Mental Health First Aid Australia is rolled out on all sites and creating positive atmosphere for mental health discussions on site, recognizing all the FIFO and drive-in, drive-out sites holding higher risks for developing mental health problems. We look forward to continue to update the market on important developments to achieve our sustainability goals as well. To the next slide, number 7, with the regional location of our 3 assets, we continue to engage with all traditional owners in the local communities as one of the most impactful ways to provide a positive social contribution. And as one example, Action Drill & Blast ADB was our Drill & Blast contractor, the South Walker, and Stanmore collaborated with Barada Barna to have a traditional artwork by local Barada Barna artist William Weilu showcased on ADB's brand new drill and hosted a traditional smoking ceremony during NAIDOC week. It's a fantastic way to recognize and support local artists. A lot more happening on the procurement, on the employment, and training space as well. We're also pleased to commission the first of 3 solar water panels in March at Isaac Plains, which is expected to contribute to the preservation of around 12 million liters of water over the life of the Isaac complex. Finally, with an average sales price of approximately $250 per ton in the half, Stanmore easily exceeded the top Queensland royalty bracket of 40%, resulting in royalties paid of close to $360 million, representing a significant contribution to the state and to local communities. Nonetheless, we are pleased to continue our voluntary community support initiatives, such as the Stanmore Community Grant Program, in-kind support to the Central Queensland University Koala Habitat Research Program, and the Fitzroy River Health Program. Moving now into slide number 9, I'll talk a bit more about our operating performance. Operationally, our assets have performed strongly with multiple records at all sites, assisting with the recovery from the impacts of the wet weather early in the year. South Walker Creek achieved records in blasted volume, total stripping, CHPP feed, and is operating at steady state as we commence the expansion project in the second half. Ultimately, the EBITDA result of $383 million, only at South Walker, which comprised around 60% of the total of our 3 sites, EBITDA demonstrates the strength of South Walker's low-cost base and its consistency. Poitrel achieved total material movement records during the second quarter, which supported the full half-a-year performance and also helped offset the larger impact of the wet weather compared to the other 2 sites early in the year. Strategic infrastructure position at Poitrel, highlighted by the ongoing tow washing program with Isaac Downs early in the quarter, which was extended into the second quarter as well, and also some continued processing of third-party coals. Isaac Plains is set to achieve, the Isaac Complex is set to achieve a record year of production, utilizing the additional processing capacity from the recently upgraded CHPP and assisted by the Red Mountain haulage program early in the quarter, while we were having some teething issues in the ramp up of the CHPP post upgrade. Came quite handy to make sure that we kept the sales volume consistent for Isaac Plains. On a consolidated basis, we are pleased with the stable saleable production figures half on half, which translates to a rolling 12-month production figure of around 12.8 million tons. And whilst the average sales price was relatively stable, we did experience an increase in unit costs on a sales tons basis, which was impacted by logistics underperformance. I will now pass on to Shane, who will provide more detail on the cost performance by site.
Thanks, Marcelo. If we turn to slide 10, we thought it might be helpful to illustrate and go into a little bit more detail on the cost performance for each mine by walking forward costs from the second half of last year to the first half of this year. Second half being the first full six-month period where we owned all three assets collectively. If we look at slide 10, South Walker Creek's performance, actually from a production point of view, has been fantastic. 3.1 million tonnes of saleable production for the half, but compared to sales of only 2.9 million tonnes, we've seen an impact on cost per sales tonne over the course of this half relative to the second half of last year. That is something that when we rebase, or if we were to rebase our free on board cash cost per sales tonne to a saleable production volume base, you can see the impact that that has of about $7.40 per tonne. And actually, on a half-on-half comparison, that would see our equivalent for this half, had we made all of those sales, on a lower basis than the equivalent period last year. The logistics impact does impact each of our mines, and it's something that we're working on and looking to pick up extra capacity on an opportunistic basis to address going forward. If we move to the next slide, we look at Poitrel's cost walk forward. Poitrel's actually had quite a different story. Poitrel had a record half last year in terms of production. The sales volumes and saleable production last year was approximately 700,000 tonnes higher compared to the first half of this year. And that was planned. That was something that was the decision made in terms of prioritising coal flow in the second half of last year, when the all-in sales price was, for this mine, $271 per tonne compared to a price this half of $237 per tonne. So what we're seeing, though, with this mine is that that volume impact has had a significant impact, again, on a metric which is based on sales volumes. And when adjusting for that, you can see that that's leading to a higher price in this half. What we will see, and we'll talk about towards the end of the presentation, is we're seeing that rebase in the second half as we catch up on coal production with a guidance range of between 2 and 2.2 million tonnes in the second half for Poitrel, which will see a significant change in the cost per tonne profile for that mine. Finally, turning to Isaac Plains. Isaac Plains has actually had a fantastic half from a production and a sales impact. Again, they haven't been immune to the logistics issues that all of our mines have faced, but they still have produced 1.6 million tonnes of actual sales in the first half of this year, and they're on track for a record year of between 2.7 and 3 million tonnes for the full year. That has come at a cost in distribution reflecting coal haulage to Red Mountain in order to produce the extra volumes. We've taken advantage of the fact that Poitrel had planned lower sales in the first half and have been able to wash some more Isaac Plains coal at their wash plant, and then we've also picked up an additional cost in railing that to Abbott Point. But all in all, we're seeing that those costs have been more than outweighed by the volume impact getting those sales out. One thing I would point out with Isaac Plains is the strip ratio does increase, and that's the primary driver for higher costs over the next few years at Isaac Plains. In bringing everything together on a consolidated basis, and we look at our financial scorecard on slide 14, we've had a really remarkable year from a revenue point of view. Again, this is looking at first half of last year versus first half of this year, which is consistent with our half-year financial report. Although we've now got 6 months of production out of Poitrel and South Walker Creek as opposed to 2 months production at the equivalent time last year, sales price has significantly decreased in that time. Notwithstanding that change in sales price from $377 last year equivalent period to $250 per tonne this year, we've still seen revenue increase over that period. That's led to $650 million US EBITDA for the half. And I always have to remind people these are US dollar numbers, so that's $1 billion Australian for the first half from Stanmore. That's translated into $400 million US of operating cash flows. From EBITDA to cash flow, we do obviously have to pick up tax and interest payments, which in particular tax, we did have some catch up from tax that was paid this year in relation to profits made last year, as well as working capital impacts from obviously the sales impacts that we've had and the increase in inventory generally. Cash has finished the half really strong at $420 million, and I'll talk a little bit more about cash and debt, but what that has done is that's led to a net cash position being achieved by the company in just over 12 months of ownership of the new assets. On the next slide, you can see our summary of our financial performance. I've talked a little bit about EBITDA and our EBITDA performance already. One thing to note, last year, at the equivalent period, we did have $291 million of non-operating adjustments with relation to the acquisition of SMC, and that was primarily, as a reminder, that was primarily a non-cash inventory adjustment of $227 million, as well as some other transition costs incurred on and around acquisition date. But what that's led to is a significant increase, half on half, in net profit after tax, about 46% improvement, and that's led to an increase in EPS across the period from 37 cents to almost 38 cents per share. In rounding out financial slides here on slide 16, and looking at cash flow and capital management, the significant cash flows from our operations have enabled us to continue to right-size and strengthen our balance sheet. The cash flow sweep under acquisition financing facility was paid in February this year, and following that payment, net-net, we have reduced that facility by around 43%. And so across the year, we've deleveraged the balance sheet, we're into a net cash position, and while retaining strong cash on our balance sheet at this time. And looking ahead to the next 6 months, the board did consider whether or not to declare an interim dividend. Our dividend policy is an annual policy, and that's by design because of the cash flow sweep and uncertainty around the timing and the amount of that payment. When looking at our first half cash flows, we have taken the opportunity to deleverage, but when looking ahead to the next 6 months, we do have committed capital projects, as we'll talk about in a few slides' time, of between about $100 and $120 million of capital spend, and there is some uncertainty about the market generally, which Marcelo will also talk about shortly. On that basis, we think it's prudent to not declare a dividend at this time, but it is something we'll definitely revisit at the end of the year once we've got more certainty with the cash flow sweep. I'll now hand it back to Marcelo to take us through projects and organic growth opportunities.
Thanks, Shane. So on slide 18, we've sought here to highlight in a simple format the various projects and the organic growth opportunities that we are now busy progressing. Focus is to remain wholly on met coal business and focusing on the met coal developments and on maximizing the opportunities to bring value forward in the portfolio with capital efficient investments. some examples here. As you see, Pit 5 in Isaac Plains is now progressing well. We are going to do a reasonable amount of overburden in advance this year in a way that from 2024, we're going to have 1.4 million tons of run of mine to be mined. South Walker Creek, of course, we announced the expansion as well. I think it falls into the same basket of a very capital-efficient investment. And additionally, we are looking to protect the operations so that they're ready to withstand any softer market conditions with improvement initiatives such as the MRHOC creek diversion at South Walker and Ramp 10 in Poitrel, which actually will make us remain resilient with strip ratios actually under control in the longer term in Poitrel and South Walker as well. The resource base is more than 4 billion tons, providing plenty of development opportunities. I'll move into slide 19 and 20 just to briefly discuss the South Walker expansion and also provide a bit of color into the Lancewood project. In slide 19, here you see the South Walker expansion snapshot. It's the largest opportunity for a very capital-light incremental expansion within the portfolio. South Walker has over 20 kilometers of strike length, providing a lot of flexibility to introduce additional fleets. However, we had two bottlenecks that needed to be addressed to be able to achieve that. First one was our previous environmental authority had a cap on ROM production of 8.4 million tons. We are pleased to report that during the second quarter of 2023, we've been granted a minor amendment to the EA, allowing us to increase production to 9.4 million tons of ROM. Secondly, debottlenecking of the wash plant is also required, and we have approved with the board the construction of a dense media cyclone module adjacent to the CHPP, to the existing plant, which is going to be built during the course of the fourth quarter this year and the end of next year. And it will be connected, it will be linked to the existing plant in a 8-day shutdown towards the back end of the second half of next year. So during this first half, we approved $69 million U.S. in capital with the board, and the intention is to commence construction of this module now in the second half, as I explained. To achieve run of mine production in line with this increased ROM cap and the CHPP capacity, the target is to introduce three additional excavator fleets from the beginning of next year. It's important to note that the additional volume that will be brought by these additional three fleets will be based on trucks and excavators, relatively to our current production base, which includes three drag lines. So why are we going to have benefits of course, incremental tons with no increase to fixed cost? This additional dirt, from a variable standpoint, is more expensive volume compared to the current total volume of production at South Walker. Together with the MRA, approved in 2022, the project-specific capital for South Walker announced since our acquisition is almost $200 million U.S., comprising of the expansion project, but also the MRA development itself, demonstrating our commitment to extract value from our existing portfolio and focusing on incremental capital-light investments. Moving to slide 20, we've briefly discussed in the past Lancewood in some previous announcements and meetings, but we thought that for those who need a refresher, Lancewood is the northern section of what the market knows as the Warswell Greenfield Deposit, which is located just to the northwest of our existing operating assets. targeting the more embargo measures. The broad awards well area is spread over four approved mining leases, and in its entirety is a significant deposit of over 1.4 billion tons of premium hard coking coal. Major capital expenditure would be required to establish the underground and support infrastructure for Wardswell as a whole. Lancewood is located to the northern part, so it's that blue area in the northern mining lease in this map, providing a short-term opportunity to initially access the resource with a smaller scale open cut on the northern mining lease, whilst we work on a potential investment decision to extend life of that mine into an underground out of the exposed high walls once we finish the mining all the open cuttable coal. We're now busy and investing significant time and resources into Lancewood, including conducting further studies, including all the ecology works, drilling and seismic, which are required, of course, to secure our environmental approvals and to progress to a final investment decision. I'll now move into a market update into slide 23. Prices were pretty strong through the first quarter, initially with supply tightness driven by the wet weather early in Q1, and also the rail import systems underperformance, as well as the news of the imminent reopening of China for imported Aussie met coals. Through the second quarter, you can see that hard coking coal and PCI prices weakened together with the Chinese economy and steel demand concerns, and the relativities as well started to widen in June and have recently traded at around 65%, which is far below our long-term average of 75-80%. It's driven by various reasons. I think the PCI market trends to be a more volatile market than prime coking coal, especially in a changing market, and it's the first lever for steel mills to pull when they are boosting steel production in the blast furnace or when they are slowing things down in a weaker market. Russian material has also remained available to markets importing Russian coals. That includes China, India, and some Southeast Asia markets, which are actually the key spot markets. And that's at a discount to the FOB Australia pricing, but of course putting pressure to FOB Australia price, especially for producers who are long and have spot volumes available. Given our position as a leading PCI exporter from Australia, obviously these current relativities are front of in our minds. And I think, as I said before, for the very reason that we were getting 100% relativities the second half of last year and even early this year, this volume of Russian calls together with a weaker demand is putting pressure on PCI relativities in the shorter term. If you move to slide 23, from a supply perspective, as I already said, discounted Russian material is finding its way into India, China, and Southeast Asia. While we expect this pressure to continue, there are indications, though, that we are nearing a PCI floor, especially as prices are converging to CFR prices for Russian coals in some of these markets, including China, which should provide support and hopefully a bounce moving forward. That's been evidence as well for thermal coal, for example. Aussie prime coal supply availability has been tight earlier into this third quarter, especially driven by some planned maintenance and some production challenges in some of the operations here in Queensland. In North America, supply has remained strong into their European markets with the normalization of the trade flows and the return of the market switching volumes to the most natural supply option. On the demand side, prices will remain sensitive to announcements and clarity around the extent of the entirety of the Chinese stimulus. While sentiment has improved through July and August, the outlook remains a bit cloudy, with the real estate construction sectors still under pressure, and the uncertainties about what the Chinese government will do to stimulate the economy. I think there's general views that they're the same measures taken in the past that brought them into some of the troubles that they need to fix now, and hence the Chinese government may be reluctant to stimulate the economy excessively, like they did in previous similar periods. India has been seasonally low during the monsoon season, with the demand expected to pick up now, thereafter, supported also by the Russian price convergence, which I explained before. The Japanese, Korea, and Taiwan markets remain our primary selling region. It's quite a stable market for us, but it's also expected to be sensitive to some of these global economic conditions, particularly steel demand from Europe, which has also had a sluggish rebound going forward. Going to slide 24, I think the purpose here is just to reiterate that we are a metallurgical coal producer, and hence the long-term fundamentals of met coal, given growing global steel demand and the installed, but also the growing capacity of steelmaking through the blast furnace integrated route. As you see in the graph, we still see out of the rest of the world, ex-China, steel production growing through the BOF route, which includes the India, who is still building blast furnaces. I was here last week with the CEO of Tata Steel, who was visiting Australia, and it's incredible the amount of growth which is still expected in India through the blast furnace route going forward. Again, we have a unique position on the ASX in this context of steel production increases and our strong met coal platform. On the supply side, in slide 25, we see that Australia is currently the largest and will remain the largest met coal exporter, with forecasts calling for an additional 38 million tons in Australian exports by 2027. Quite challenging, as we all know, given some of the challenges facing supply, including capital exit by some of the major miners, infrastructure constraints, regulatory pressure, ESG costs, project approvals, labor availability, and a productivity challenges. So I think while there's quite a clear net growth on the demand side, despite the move into green steel by many steel producers in some traditional markets, I think the ability for the supply side to catch up is quite questionable. On slide 26, you'll see that our customers are located in very stable steelmaking regions, a very healthy exposure to the traditional Japan, Korea, and Taiwan markets, and a very positive exposure as well to the growing markets like India. The quality of our products are highly valued by our traditional customers. The growth story in India over the next 4 or 5 years is very real, as I said, and as illustrated here by this graph. The rollout of blast furnace capacity continues to grow and is projected to materialize an additional at least 42 million tons of steel capacity in India by 2027. This is real growth. It's actual construction and ongoing work happening on the ground. Our low ash products are a good fit with Indian coke blends, positioning as well to expand our existing relationships with reputable names in the region. I'll now hand over to Shane, who will talk a bit about our guidance numbers for the second half and for the full year.
Thanks, Marcelo. We'll now close out the presentation with our market guidance on slide 28. We're pleased to resume the provision of guidance to the market this half year, incorporating our projections to the end of 2023 for saleable production, consolidated costs, and capital expenditure to the end of the year. Saleable production is expected to remain consistent with the second half, with normalised production from Poitrel following the pit setup activities in the first half, as I mentioned earlier. The unwind of stockpiles and improved performance of logistics providers, we expect to be able to improve sales volumes for the second half, which will support stabilisation of cost per tonne metrics for the full year. Isaac Plains is expected to be temporarily impacted by the development of Pit 5 North, which will be expensed within unit costs before first coal is realised in 2024. So that may impact costs at Isaac Plains, but we'll see that coal delivered next year. Capital expenditure will step up in the second half of 2023 with the rescheduling of Ramp 10 box cut from Q1 to a little later in the year due to wet weather and increased development activities following clearing and grubbing works completed for MRA2C in the first half. We also look forward to commencing works for the South Walker Creek expansion during the second half of 2023. That concludes the formal part of our presentation, and I'll now hand back to our moderator for Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you would like to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question today comes from Colin McClelland from Petra Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. A couple of questions. Firstly, on Daunia, I appreciate you probably can't say that much, but can you give us an idea of where the process is? Is it another 6 months or is it 2 months?
Well, you are right. We can't say much. So I think I would rather not to comment. I think I'll just leave you with the comment that obviously Stanmore will always be looking at opportunities that have fit with our existing portfolio and that it has a good value proposition that includes organic and inorganic growth. Okay, I think that's as much as I can comment.
Okay, super. Thank you. Thanks. And just a follow up, if I can, on Isaac Plains. You guys talk about that pretty much as a sort of 20-year operation, but the Isaac Downs BFS has things winding down really from 2030. Like, how do we see that? Because obviously the coal price has changed quite a lot, so that BFS is probably a bit dated anyway. But, like, how should we be viewing that? And with the wash plant upgraded as it is now, like, is that washing all its own coal rather than hauling to Red Mountain still?
Yeah, good question, Colin. Look, the upgrade in the wash plant in Isaac Plains was always a no-brainer. It was an extremely low capital opportunity, and we're going to benefit from this now in this year, next year, where we're going to have record volumes. So reality is, I think you're right. I think as we go forward, I think to be producing this high run of mine volumes is unlikely. Okay, we knew that this was for 2 or 3 years or 2 years maximum, especially where the drag line was advancing well in low strip ratio areas, okay, where we were uncovering coal fast, and the last thing we wanted was to slow down the drag line, okay? Hence, that was the logic of the expansion. I think going forward, the haulage to Red Mountain from Isaac Downs, it will only make sense if we if we could produce more ROM or if we have real actual problems in this IPC HPP, because I think the cost of hauling to Red Mountain through the highway is a lot higher, okay? And then it brings you to the next point, which is the whole road. Does it make sense to build a whole road? I think, again, assuming that now the CHPP at the Isaac Plains is upgraded, I think we have what we need, okay, in Isaac Plains to wash our volumes. A whole road, if it can be built cheaply, okay, even for us to be able to have, you know, service equipment and all the interaction between the two sites that not requiring to go to the Pictou's Highway could be desirable, and that could be an opportunity even for like a dry weather haul road. But that's something we're studying. I don't think it's a must. And then to your point on life of mine, Colin, I do see Isaac Downs having at least another 5 years of competitive open cut coal, potentially six. Thereafter, we start to see the target seams splitting, okay, which then start to become very uneconomic to keep going. And that could be an opportunity for us even to consider a move of the drag line in Isaac Plains to South Walker. Quite a long walk, but it would come very handy for South Walker back at the end of this decade. Quite a significant walk project, but something to be, we have a lot of time to work. And I think to your point on the life of mine, there are options in Isaac Complex, as you know, and the underground project alone, in its original conception, used to be a 13 to 14 year project, I think 13 to 14 year project. We are now looking at that project, and there's additional geotech information that's going to be important for us to make sure that we understand the potential of the project going forward. But, I mean, life of mine, not necessarily is life of mine at the same volume levels, okay? I think what we need to know to do now is to look at what is the optimized volumes for Isaac Plains in the longer term. But as I said, it does include the underground project, but also the Isaac South prospect, which is EPC 55, another 10 kilometers south of Isaac Downs, which is another potential extension. We are progressing as well with drilling, with some further studies.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tom Sartor from Morgans. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gents. Thanks for the call. Just three quick ones. Shane mentions those logistics constraints, or you're looking at opportunistic capacity in the second half to reduce those stocks. Have you been able to reduce those stocks at all so far in the second half? And then do you have a feel, or can you give us a feel for how much sales might exceed production in the second half?
Tom, yes, we already had a pretty strong July and August, okay? There's a bit of catching up already taking place. And yes, we did bring some additional solution in the form of short-term capacity through third-party assignment or trades, which will help us to deal with the situations with, I mean, because of the current or in the underperformance in the first half, what happens is every time you have a train cancellation, for example, you are burning network paths, you know, and I think what we took a decision to bring some additional surge capacity to this business with the aim of shipping our full year plan volumes. So I think we're confident that the numbers we are presenting here for saleable production, we are hoping that we can ship close to that, okay? Close to that, I mean, within the range, and hopefully reducing our stocks by the end of the year. That's the target. That's what we are busy working on.
Terrific, thanks. And a related question, just for the South Walker expansion and maybe for Pit 5, have you got good visibility? Have you secured or have you got good visibility on the rail and port capacity you need to get those tons to market?
We do, because as you can see, Tom, Poitrel on annualized basis compared to second half last year is a little lower, and that's probably why we developed Ramp 10. That's the steady state capacity. I think we need to look at what is the best outcome for Poitrel from a life of mine and mine planning standpoint to optimize strip ratios, okay? It's a pit that's very busy, and as you know, having, you know, strike length to work, so hence the importance of Poitrel, sorry, of Ramp 10. But that leaves us a bit with a bit more capacity to be able to ship some of these additional volumes in the IPC complex this year, next year. So yes, the answer is yes, we have looked at this from a consolidated basis, and when taking some of these incremental, very important surge, we also consider some of these upcoming volumes for Pit 5 as well.
No worries. Thank you. And lastly, with the increasing size of the business and your net cash position, have you considered or looked at more conventional debt sources as a medium-term sort of refinancing option? Or have you looked at sort of rolling forward or upsizing your existing facilities?
Yeah, Tom, we are. It's a good question. We are considering that as we get closer to the end of our non-call period on our acquisition financing. So as you remember, the first 2 years of the acquisition financing is locked away without the ability to voluntarily repay or refinance as part of that agreement. But that comes up in May next year, and as we get closer to that date, I think it's something that we're already starting to plan for and turn our mind to as that gets closer. We would like to maximize the value and look to normalize, I guess, our corporate facilities that are different to what would normally be acquisition facilities. So that's on the radar for early next year.
Terrific. Thanks, gents.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jim Xu from Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Hi, Marcelo. Maybe just a question on the market. You've mentioned that the Russian prices now converged. Are the Russians still selling PCI at a discount to the Australian index? And can you give us an idea about the cost base of that Russian coal? You know, how much lower can they go?
Jim, yeah, that's the key point of the PCI market now, which is when we're gonna reach a level where the Russians start to, you know, to be incentivized to keep discounting sales, right? Yeah, I think they are converging the CFR. If you look at the CFR China, CFR India prices, they're close to be converging with the FOB Australia. So you can see that there's a, we are close to be getting to a, what could be a, an expected floor. How far they can keep going, I think they are, I mean, we wouldn't put all of them in the same basket. I think you will have some lower cost exporters in Russia, but there are also some higher costs. And the PCI market's not so large, which means, I mean, if some of these higher cost producers in Russia are getting close to a floor, this could be enough for us to hopefully see a floor arising soon. I think I would like to point for something else as well. With this sort of relativities, I think would be also reason to expect that steelmakers globally will start to get more, of course, more, their appetite for increased PCI injection rates increase. Like, where a year ago, they were buying, paying, you know, 100% relative for PCI, but at that time, of course, steel production was a bit stronger. I think with weaker steel production and with the focus on cost, if it's more attractive to buy more PCI, they relatively to PLV, and the PLV has been strong, right, with a certain support. I think we should expect that relativity to somehow, you know, normalize at a certain point. So I think in the same way it happened when it was up, we expect that to happen when it's low now. The question is when? So I think the Russian floor, together with the potential opportunity cost for global steelmakers, will play a role in establishing where that floor is.
Okay, thank you. And maybe just a question on costs. You mentioned that energy-related costs, so explosives, diesel and electricity, stabilised in the back end of the first half. Given the recent rise in energy prices, do you expect energy costs to still be a tailwind in the second half? And then also further to that, you know, Poitrel and South Walker Creek are covered by the safeguard mechanism. Does your cost guidance include any potential costs from that safeguard mechanism?
Look, I'll comment, or I'll let Shane add his thoughts as well. But look, I think we've seen the worst of the cost pressures. Look, we still have inflationary environment, as we all know, right? You know, just as an example, we are going through a EA negotiation in South Walker, okay, and which the EA is expected to renew in March next year. And in its last two renewals, it was in a very different environment. So labor costs are still under pressure, as we know, 3.5% unemployment in the country. If you look at inputs and diesel, you saw in the waterfalls, the diesel is given as a relief. I tend to think that we've seen the worst, but it is still an inflationary environment. What was the second part of the question?
I think there was a question on the safeguard mechanism.
On the safeguard?
Yeah.
Look, we are digesting some of the latest versions of the or news around the legislation, okay, which is, for example, industry references for and the timing for migration into those industry references. I think we haven't been significantly impacted. So I think at the moment we see that in the short term, the impact for us will be immaterial. Okay, and obviously we are working hard on our initiatives on how to manage that in the longer term. And there are some interesting prospects, especially South Walker. And I think, yes, I'll let Shane comment, but I think, yes, in the guidance numbers, we have reflected what the expected impact is.
Yeah, that's right, Marcel. I was just going to add exactly that our guidance estimates do include adjustment for this, so it's fully covered. Obviously, we keep an eye on the price of carbon credits. They move around and fluctuate a little bit, so we'll keep a close eye on those. But as Marcel said, we're not seeing a hugely material impact on our costs generally as a result of this.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from John Ogden from Eastern Value Limited. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Great results. Thank you very much. I've got, I think, four questions. The first relates to slide 24 and some of your comments there, which is very interesting, that you've got PCI makes up 59% of the coal input. But in tougher times, steel makers reduce the PCI. Can you explain why that is? I mean, can you just sort of explain life from the point of view of the steel mills and why they would increase or decrease PCI, and what the sort of ratios would change or percentages would change from and to as the market goes up and down, just so we can understand that more? And then related to that, can you just go through mind by mind what's the mix that you had in the first half in terms of PCI, semi-soft, and if there's any hard coking coming out of anywhere? So that's the first one. The second one is just, I think there's quite high finance costs. Can you explain why that was? Looks high to the debt, even knowing that you've retired some debt in the first half. And third question just relates to logistics. Can you give us some more insight into what the problems are? Is it labor availability or capacity of rail, capacity of port, or some of all of those things? And why aren't the logistics guys investing in more capacity? And then how that relates to the longer term, you know, shorter term or longer term picture with, as you mentioned, 38 million more tons of supply needed to come out of Australia in the coming years. Yeah, I think those are the ones I have at the moment. So a few things to look at there. Oh, sorry, the fourth one, I beg your pardon, Lancewood, if you can just tell us about problems on permitting, or if it won't be a problem, any timeline, any CapEx, and what the coal quality is going to be. Thank you.
No worries, John. I'll try to cover as best as I can in the time available. I'll let Shane comment on the finance costs. PCI, so maybe just to clarify on slide 24, what I mean with 59% is that's what our product mix in our overall portfolio is in PCI, okay, volumes. So it's not what the steelmakers use normally out of what they use in a blast furnace, just for clarification. So we are quite a, let's say, we have quite a significant volume as PCI in our portfolio. That includes 100% of the South Walker operation. PCI has two roles in a steelmaking route via blast furnaces. It is a fuel, but it's also a reducing agent, okay? So over the years, especially in more, let's say, mature steelmaking regions, you see a trend increase of PCI injection, okay, which is a pulverized coal. It's ground coal injected through the vents in the bottom of the blast furnace at the high temperatures and pressures. And I think what it does is it helps to give the blast furnace through hot air a heat, right? It helps to create heat to promote the reducing reactions. But it also acts as a reducing agent in a sense that it actually can replace 1 ton of coke or metallurgical coke that the steelmaker loads on the top of the blast furnace. So it could be quite attractive, okay, because you are actually reducing your coke consumption by increasing your PCI injection rates, okay? There's a limit to how much a steelmaker can use because he still needs coke to act as a physical support for the blast furnace. But I think the reason that PCI is more volatile is the first thing that the steelmaker adjusts when they are either boosting steel production or reducing steel production is the blast furnace. Is the part of the conventional steel maker that's more flexible to small production adjustments compared to, for example, coke making. Coke making, it's quite a more challenging, okay, for the steel makers to shut or to vary because it's a very sensitive facility. Let's put it like this. So, hence, when things are good, the PCI boost is quicker because it's the quickest way for the steel maker to boost production in the blast furnace to source more PCI. But conversely, when it's weak, and they start producing less. So that's the dynamics of PCI. I think we have around 59% of our portfolio in PCI, very high quality PCIs. South Walker Creek produces 100% of PCI. Coitrail produces between 35 to 40% of PCI. With the balance being a semi-hard coking coal. And Isaac Plains produces mostly 100% of a semi-soft coking coal. So I think that probably helps addressing the two questions. I think to your question on rail and port, I think what's driving underperformance, I mean, the system in Queensland has never really, if you look at Darempo Bay, it has a contracted 85 million tons of capacity. It has never even ever shipped any close to that. So there's been a an inefficiency in that value chain, and not only through the BCT, but through the other ports as well. I think we have, you know, network issues. We have, you know, rolling stock maintenance issues, but we also have labor constraints now at the moment as well in that part of the value chain. That's driving some of that other performance. I think to your question of increased supplies of, out of Australia, I think definitely rail imports is going to be one of the constraints. Hence, I see the challenge of Australia being able to put another 38 million tons of volume of met coal out in the market. I think with the capital constraints we face now, I do struggle to see, you know, significant expansions in some of these existing corridors. But capacity may become available with some of the mines being run down and, you know, depleting as well. So for producers like us who are on the growth mode, I think there's an opportunity not only there's an opportunity to secure capacity with other producers like we are doing already that are actually winding down production. Maybe to the last point on Lancewood, I think it's on the coal quality, it's a premium hard coking coal deposit, which is great. It's something that we now don't have in our portfolio, like a PLV style material. We do need to do all the ecology works, including groundwater. So we need to do all the environmental permitting process. So we are talking about process that should be at least 3 years. At a smaller scale, we are hoping that this could help us move a bit faster in a way that we start an open cut deposit with a lower capital, in a way that it can fund its own cash requirements as we move in the longer term into the underground.
Just covering off on, I think there was a question there on financing costs for the first half of this year. Look, nothing out of the ordinary going through there. I think if you were to compare the first half of this year to the first half of last year, the step up is obviously with the acquisition financing being in place for a full 6 months versus just 2 months of the equivalent period last year. The other thing just to bear in mind is within the financing costs on the face of the P&L, there's also notional interest charges on lease liabilities. As a result of AASB 1016 that passed through that, as well as unwinding of or amortization of initial setup costs under the accounting standards as well, which go through those numbers too, and any fees or borrowing costs associated with bank guarantee facilities, etc. So, nothing out of the ordinary that's sort of going through, but that step up on a half versus half basis is clearly just due to the financing being in place for a full 6 months.
Thank you very much, guys, and appreciate the very good answers. Good luck for the second half.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Unfortunately, that does conclude our time for questions today. I'll now hand back to Mr. Matos for any closing remarks.
Thanks, everyone, for the questions. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all of our shareholders for their continued support. We are very proud of the culture that we've established and that we're building here. Only just over a year since the acquisition of SMC. Thanks for our teams, all the employees and our contractors who contribute so meaningfully to building our culture, which has translated into a very a safe working environment and a robust operating performance. As highlighted, our business has made significant strides during the first half to position Stanmore for resilience and to deliver long-term value to our shareholders. We remain focused on continuing to optimize our operations through exciting organic growth projects such as the South Walker expansion, whilst maintaining our number one priority to return our people home safely every day. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for your time. Have a good day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.